This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, March 31st of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from a couple of labor organizers about a lawsuit filed today to enforce recently passed labor law protections for agricultural workers in Colorado. After that, food columnist John Lindorf will be in the Boulder studio with a special guest to chat about a range of local food issues. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then I'll host a live call-in show with you, the listeners. We'll discuss upcoming programming changes. I'll ask for input on crafting and updating our disaster coverage practices. And we'll open a space for listener feedback. That's from 8:32 to 9:30 a.m. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for a special edition of the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Governor Jared Polis signed into law Wednesday a bill to prohibit open carry of firearms near polling places and other electoral facilities. The Vote Without Fear Act was created to prevent intimidation where Coloradans vote and where votes are counted. Colorado law had already banned open carry where legislative hearings or meetings are held. The Colorado chapters of Moms Demand Action and Students Demand Action championed the bill. According to their parent organization, Every Town for Gun Safety, Colorado is among the top 10 states with the strongest gun laws. Colorado is often described as having a gold standard system for voting rights. State lawmakers aim to make RTD buses and trains free to reduce vehicle emissions during hot, smoggy summer months. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
After months of talks, RTD and state lawmakers have settled on a one-month pilot target for the fare-free transit. The Denver Post reports that a bill passed its first state Senate committee vote 4-1 on Tuesday. The bill would make the month of August as the likely month when RTD would run the fare-free pilot, with another one possible in 2023. If it clears both chambers, State Senate Bill 180 would set aside $14 million each of the next two summers to help pay for the free transit programs around all of Colorado. The bill also includes $30 million to expand services in coming years on Bustang, the state's regional bus service. The main hope of the free transit pilot is to draw more people onto RTD buses and trains at the height of the season when Metro Denver's ozone readings are at extreme levels. They are also hoping the bill tempts more readers back to RTD as it is still recovering from a pandemic ridership plunge. RTD does have concerns that a larger pilot would strain the agency's resources while it attempts to fill staffing gaps and get a handle on recent safety concerns. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A new Colorado law says prison inmates who work must be paid at least minimum wage. Prisoners who participate in the Department of Corrections Take Two Offsite Work Program are eligible. About 100 inmates are currently employed in the program. It was created to help released prisoners transition more easily into life as free citizens. Many private companies pay pennies on the dollar for prison labor, which became more plentiful in the 1990s due to maximum minimum sentencing laws and a boom in prison construction. The legal framework for underpaid prison labor dates back to a loophole established at the time of the abolition of slavery. Longmont City Council members voted Tuesday to drop almost $200,000 in permitting fees in the planned construction of a village for homeless veterans. A nonprofit called the Veterans Community Project is raising funds for 26 tiny houses. The organization helps veterans living on the streets transition out of homelessness. Nonprofit representatives had argued that the permitting fees would delay construction until next year. The project's building costs are estimated to be over $5 million, and about $500,000 more is needed. A judge Wednesday dismissed a murder case against a 96-year-old resident of an assisted living center in Lafayette. Oki Payne was accused of fatally shooting 44-year-old Ricardo Medina Rojas, a maintenance worker at Legacy Assisted Living. Payne was deemed mentally incompetent to stand trial. His attorneys filed a motion to dismiss the case, and prosecutors did not object. The attack began after Payne accused Medina Rojas of stealing money from him. Lafayette police say the allegations of theft were unsubstantiated. Payne will be admitted to a secure unit of the Colorado Mental Health Institute at Pueblo. Colorado wildlife officials confirmed the first cases of an avian flu in the state. According to news outlet Axios Denver, the virus has spread from the East Coast and was found in wild snow geese and Ross's geese in Sedgwick County last week. Avian flu is highly contagious and often deadly to chickens. The Denver Zoo decided to move its birds indoors for at least 28 days to avoid exposure to the virus. No chickens in Colorado have tested positive, but across the country there is concern that the disease could devastate the poultry industry. Fire officials continue to monitor what remains of the NCAR fire. KGNU's Luis Licon has more.
The NCAR fire remains at 190 acres with 90% containment. Boulder's Fire and Rescue conducted a flyover with special sensor equipment Wednesday. Data show that the remaining hotspots are still being extinguished. Boulder's Office of Emergency Management transferred responsibility for putting out the fire blaze back to the city on Wednesday. Boulder, neighboring counties, no longer in drought. Government officials say Boulder County and several neighboring counties are no longer in drought. The U.S. Drought Monitor is now classifying the area as abnormally dry. Nearly half of Colorado is considered to be in a moderate drought. This is an improvement from December, when the entire state was classified as experiencing drought conditions.
For KGNU, Luis Licon.
Sunny and a little wind along the Front Range today, then a chance of rain and possibly snow going into Friday morning. Little or no snow accumulation is expected. Today in Boulder, a high near 61 with a low around 37. In Denver, a high near 63 and a low around 35. And in Fort Collins, a high near 63 and a low around 35. Outside the Boulder studios, it's 32 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Today is Cesar Chavez Day, which commemorates the life and work of agricultural worker organizer for whom the holiday is named. It's also timed to reflect on labor protections yet to be won. Last legislative session, Colorado lawmakers passed SB 2187, also known as the Agricultural Workers' Rights Bill. At the time of its passage, it was considered a landmark win for workers who were exempt from the federal labor law protections workers in other sectors have. But the law's passage wasn't the end of the story. I'm joined live over video conferencing by Pamela Resendez Trujano, Executive Director of Colorado Jobs with Justice, and Hunter Knapp, Development Director of Project Protect Food Systems. Thanks to both of you for joining me today.
Good morning, Shane.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning. Pamela, this first question is for you. What exactly was the Agricultural Workers' Rights Bill supposed to accomplish, and why has it not fully come into force?
So specifically the Agricultural Bill of Rights and the rule that's under question has to do with overtime. The overtime ruling that came out does not reflect what SB 87 fought for, which is to make sure that agricultural workers get overtime the same as other workers in the state of Colorado. And unfortunately, that's not the case. I can definitely let Hunter jump in and speak more as to why that's not the case and why we are taking legal action.
Well, let me jump in with another quick question. Colorado Jobs with Justice, along with a coalition of labor, community, faith, and student organizations, have filed a lawsuit to challenge delays in the implementation of these expanded overtime protections for agricultural workers. So Hunter, can get into the details of the substance behind the lawsuit, but also, you know, give us a background as to why agricultural workers don't qualify for overtime in the first place.
Thank you, Shannon. So starting with why agricultural workers don't qualify for overtime in the first place, back in 1935, when the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act was passed, agricultural workers and domestic workers as well were excluded from coverage. This was adopted into many state laws explicitly, including Colorado, up until last summer when SB 2187 passed. And the law mandated that the Department of Labor and Employment establish overtime pay standards that met certain criteria. The most important of those was that they would be equitable with other industries in Colorado. And that means 40 hours per week or 12 hours per day starts the premium pay of overtime. Unfortunately, the Department of Labor and Employment set the overtime pay standards for agricultural workers to begin at 60 hours per week starting in November of 2022. And then gradually reducing, but still never reaching that 40 hours per week or 12 hours per day standard.
First of all, 60 hours a week. So why such a high threshold before eligibility for overtime pay?
Many agricultural workers across Colorado frequently work 60, 70, even 80 hours a week during the peak hours of the growing season. So the rulemaking process involves stakeholders from both sides, and while the organizations like us, Colorado Jobs with Justice and Towards Justice, were advocating for that 40 per hour week, 12 hour per day standard, industry groups argued that that was impossible and that it should be set at 60 or even 70 hours per week, which would eliminate the need for them to pay overtime to their employees in many instances.
I'm going to turn back to Pamela. So not just a very long work day during the growing and harvesting season, but also what are the conditions of those labors, and how did the recently passed law affect the conditions on the ground in the fields?
Yeah, so as you all know, we're currently in a climate crisis. And so the conditions in which these workers have to endure, not only the long hours, but they also have to deal with extreme heat, at times wildfires, and, you know, also making sure that they're able to complete their task as fast as possible, right? And so the conditions that this legislative bill also took into account have to do with heat, like workers being able to get shade from the heat as well as water breaks, and then also making sure that there are certain services that they're able to attain without any complication regarding either health access or housing justice.
And with health access, there's today the protections for uninsured in the pandemic have expired. I mean, are there any other permanently moving forward protections that these essential workers will be eligible for under the terms of this new law?
Unfortunately, we were not able to include anything to improve the health insurance situation for agricultural workers in this past piece of legislation. As you mentioned, many agricultural workers have trouble accessing health care, often due to immigration status. And that is definitely something we would like to see change going forward. But unfortunately, we were not able to make that change in this bill.
And finally, what are the next steps in this lawsuit that's specifically having to do with overtime pay? What can agricultural workers expect in the upcoming season for overtime and for labor conditions in general? What's really changed and what is still to be determined?
Unfortunately, the litigation process is slow. And as I mentioned, the Department of Labor and Employment decided not to fully implement the even 60-hour threshold of overtime until November of 2022, which really means most agricultural workers won't see a difference in their paycheck until the 2023 growing season. So although we are fighting to change it, unfortunately, there is really no change for overtime pay for agricultural workers throughout 2022.
I've been speaking with Pamela Resendez Trujano, Executive Director of Colorado Jobs with Justice, and Hunter Knapp, Development Director of Project Protect Food Systems Workers. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Shannon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Up next is Radio Nibbles with John Lindorf. You know what that music means. It means it's time for Radio Nibbles with John Lindorf, breaking local food news with a special guest this morning. Good morning, John, and good morning to your special guest.
Good morning, Shannon. This morning, we got a ton of food news. So I brought in a special guest host, my old friend Kate Lacroix, who is a notable local food person. She started First Bite many years ago, and she also was responsible for leading a move to have all school lunches paid for in the Boulder Valley school system last year, and she got some other things going on. Hi, Kate.
Hi, John. How's it going?
Good. So we're going to cover a lot of things that are going on. For one thing, there's the restaurant world in Boulder is reopening now. It's coming back. Spaces are filling in. So let's talk about some of the places that are opening or changing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's hard to tell on the face of it if it's just that we're all moving again, so it seems like there's so much activity. But when you look at it, there really is a lot of movement in the market.
I noticed as I was coming to KGNU, there's a new coffee place just up the street.
Yes, actually 33rd and Walnut is going to be the location for the new January coffee. Christy and John, a new couple and also business partners, are set to open a coffee shop there in about 10 days.
And other new places coming, Maria Empanada is opening where Salvaggio's Deli was. And not that far away from there, Mason's Dumpling Shop, which has gotten quite a buzz in the news, especially in Denver, because, they do great dumplings. So that can never, it can never hurt to have more dumplings.
You can never have too many dumplings. And then there are refreshes and rebrands and reopenings. Top of the list on my docket is the reopening of Brasserie 1010 right. In late spring.
Brasserie 1010 on Walnut Street had been open. It was really an institution for, I think, 15 years, or it was a long time it was open.
Yeah, quite a long time. Not quite as long as the Med, but, you know, Peg and Joe Romano have a reputation for just running great restaurants in this town. But I think, understandably, after the ravages of COVID, they just needed to close shop for a bit. But there was always a possibility that they were going to reopen Brasserie.
So Brasserie 1010's reopening. The Med is not. That's been sold, and we're not sure what that's going to become yet.
Yeah, my understanding is that it's been parceled. There's that new side and that old side, and that it has been parceled, and that there will be some announcement on an opening someday, but nothing now.
The other thing I heard was that, remember, Murphy's North in Willow Springs had closed. It's going to reopen soon as a place called The Local.
The Local. Well, they're going to need to serve meatloaf because we're really running shy on places that can do that old plate of meatloaf and mashies.
And the other thing was that Cured, which had been like the standard bearer for charcuterie and Boulder and wine and everything else, changed ownership and changed names.
Yes, that's right. Will and Coral approached me 10 years ago and I helped them open. And it was a success from day one, and they worked so hard, and then I think they just passed it off to this wine heavy multi-unit operator out of the Northeast, I believe, and I think they've been doing fine things so far.
Great. A lot of issues right now in Boulder dining. One of them was things seem like they are getting better. We're sitting here in the studio unmasked, and people are going out to eat again and stuff. But they've decided to continue the outdoor dining opportunity in Boulder that really has helped a lot of places.
Yes, that's right. I know they want to standardize the outdoor seating arrangement. And so the city has been working on a standardized option. And I know that it was something that felt very, very enjoyable to patrons who were just dying to get out. And it had a nice, almost European feel.
Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of places where I'd rather eat outside anyway. You know, I think all of us are sort of making decisions on a place-by-place basis, you know, where we feel safe now.
Exactly. What remains to be seen is if it's a good long-term solution, because, of course, parking is a nightmare down there anyhow. And there has been some pushback from some of the restaurants who feel that they didn't get as much real estate or were kind of pushed off to the side of this thoroughfare. And so it remains to be seen how successful it will be.
Well, there's that chunk of Pearl just east, west of the mall, which had been open and then was closed off for a while. And there's really a lot of, you know, there's something to be said for having places where you can pull up and get something.
One of the more beautiful setups that I've seen recently is Hoppe. They really expanded out into the center of the Bricks, and I believe that's probably between 11th and Broadway. And it's just amazing when it's full and the water's flowing down that rock and people are coming and going from both sides. I mean, it almost feels like normal times.
Yeah. I mean, it at least theoretically. The other thing that happened, I don't think we talked about it, but the liquor license application for Driftwind Restaurant is finally a restaurant at the Boulder Reservoir. And I thought it was such a lovely idea that I could go there at sunset and sit and have a bite and a drink. But it was turned down because, well, the neighbors didn't like it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, Kate and Josh Diner have really emerged as great restaurateurs over the past years, of course, bringing us Tiako, working with Daniel Asher to do Ashkara.
Right. But were they expecting it to be available?
I think that they really had no idea that it would be turned down because, to your point, it is such a great idea. But I think it's a NIMBY issue, right?
Yeah, I think so, too. Were there a couple other things you wanted to mention?
Yeah, you know, I am very intrigued by, as you know, Edwin Zoe and what he's done with Zoe Mama and Chimera and Fomi. And just recently, he made the decision to rebrand and rename that operation here in Boulder, Dragonfly Noodle.
So it will change the emphasis to Pan-Asian noodle dishes a little bit?
He's always been intrigued by Pan-Asian noodle dishes, but what we can expect are really specific things like Hong Kong pan-fried noodles, dumplings. He recently perfected a tonkotsu ramen. So just kind of going deeper into some of the dishes he has offered and offering some new ones as well.
All right. And I wanted to mention that, today's Thursday, which means Nibbles is out online and in the Boulder Weekly. I've got a column about a very, really neat place in Longmont. It's called the MECO Coffee Collective. It stands for Maine and Colorado. And two guys who really are doing excellent coffee and drinks, but they've created this community center there on North Main Street in Longmont. They also produced the most delicious cheese crackers I have ever tasted. And they're mostly cheese. It's like a Frico almost, but it's a cracker. And they're selling them at Meow Wolf and stuff. So I'm just happy to see that happening. So I got a question for you, Kate. What's your favorite? What's the best thing you've tasted lately?
You know, besides my cooking, I have to say I had the most remarkable Snarf's sandwich the other day. It was a steak sandwich, and it blew my mind. And so that is my answer. Take it or leave it.
I will take it. That sounds wonderful. Thanks for being here, Kate. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me on, John.
And thank you, John, as always, for your Thursday appearance with Radio Nibbles. BoulderWeekly.com is where you can find his column.
Thanks, everybody.
Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate, too. Here's Cacciatore, Dory.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Steve Miller, Luis Licon, Rosana Longobetter, Athena Robles, and John Lindorf for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a live listener comment show. That's after these news headlines from the BBC.